Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Knox Town Hall. We want to welcome our alumni and parents. This is Lisa Van Riper, Vice President of Communications and IT, and we are so happy to have you for this opportunity to hear directly from President McGadney and be a part of the conversation about moving Knox forward. As all of you know, Andy is the 20th president of Knox College. He was inaugurated in May, and he's about to complete his first year at Knox. If you have questions throughout the call, please hit *3. Thank you so much. And now I'd like to turn it over to President McGadney.
Well, hello, Lisa. Thank you for that great introduction. And welcome to our Knox alumni and parents. I'm delighted to be able to have a chance to engage with you in this way. And I do look forward to hearing your great questions and thoughts and comments. I do have a few things I just wanted to kind of share with all of you. Just thinking about this first year, which I can't believe has gone so quickly. But in many ways, it's gone so quickly because it's been so exciting. I mean, it's been really wonderful to kind of engage with students and faculty and alumni, parents, trustees, trustee emeriti. It's just been really remarkable. And as you might know or recall, we actually did a commencement for the class of 2020 in the fall. We've had a great homecoming reunion that was a bit different this year because of some of the challenges we had with the pandemic, but it turned out to be awesome having so many people back on our campus this spring, along with our inauguration and commencement and board meetings. It's just been a really tremendous first year, along with introducing some new tenured faculty members, which you probably received some information about earlier this year. It's just been a great time at Knox, and I look forward to talking through some of those details. One thing, Lisa, that I might want to just start sharing a little bit about is thinking through kind of the strategic priorities that we agreed upon this year and how we created those priorities together with our community. When I started July 1, some of the things that I was really fortunate, and who knew that this would be part of the exciting part of all of this, was that when I was announced to the community in February, I actually had the chance to start engaging with the Knox community in the spring. So from March, April, May, I was on a series of Zoom calls with faculty members, with students, with trustees, donors, members of the Galesburg community. And during those calls and during those moments, sometimes one-on-one, sometimes in groups, I was asking members of our community about what excited them about Knox. What were some of the challenges? What were some of the opportunities? And as you might imagine, people were very candid with their comments. And I was able to actually take a lot of that information and share it back to our board during our first summer board retreat back in August. And from that retreat, we really started to think about what were going to be the 3 to 5 key strategic priorities that we were going to work on together during this first year. I was delighted that the board, along with our senior staff, committed to 5 strategic priorities. Those priorities were focus on increasing admission and enrollment, elevating Knox's reputation and expanding our reach, thinking about how we were going to identify and create distinctive student programs and experiences, addressing our financial challenges, and ultimately to plan for a comprehensive fundraising campaign. And during this past year, we've taken the opportunity at each board meeting to kind of focus in on 1 or 2 of those strategic priorities to build out a plan that we look to unveil with our community this fall. And in that plan this fall, it'll take the information that we've learned and that we've developed together over the year on those 5 strategic priorities, as well as information that we're gathering from individual visits that I continue to have with every single academic program and department on this campus, with continued conversations with our community members, students, and staff. And all of those conversations, ideas, possibilities will be incorporated into our strategic planning framework document but I look forward to unveiling this fall.
That sounds amazing, Andy. Thank you so much. So I think we're going to jump into a poll. Thank you for sharing your reflections and information about the strategic priorities and how you went about shaping those. And now we're going to do a poll. And the poll is, in what ways are you currently engaged with Knox? And the potential answers are magazine and class notes, and that is if you hit one on your telephone, that's number one. Social media and email is number two. Attending Knox events in Galesburg or regional clubs is number three. Philanthropic giving is number four. And more than one of the items from the list is number five. And as you're hitting your button, I want to remind you that star three is the way to get in the queue for questions. It's like raising your hand. If you hit star three, you will be put in the queue. You will not interrupt the call. But we would love to have you hit star three and raise your hand for a question for Andy. Thank you. Okay, we're getting some answers to the poll. All right. Wow. Okay, so with the poll, it looks like most of you, 60% of you, voted for more than one of the items on the list. So thank you so much for your commitment and dedication to Knox. We really appreciate it. Andy, is there anything else that you would like to share before we jump into Q&A?
Well, sure. There may be a couple things that might be helpful. You know, anytime you join a community, you join a community where you have a chance to see the positive aspects, the joys, the excitement. And then sometimes, unfortunately, you also become a part of a community when real sadness happens. And I think some of you may be aware that our assistant professor of economics and men's and women's water polo and swimming team coach, our head coach, passed away recently. This is Jonathan Powers. And I just wanted to share a little bit with all of you about some of the amazing kind of reflections about Jonathan's impact on our campus. And as you might imagine, as a new president, you don't have a chance to meet every single person on the community, but there are obviously those that you engage with more than others. And I was fortunate to actually have the chance to engage quite closely with Jonathan over my first year here. He was In addition to his coaching responsibilities, he was also the chair of our faculty executive committee, we call FASCOM. And in many ways, he was a quiet advisor, counselor for me and our senior team as we looked to move the college forward. And there are just so many moments where his kind of candor, his sense of humor, his ability to engage with not just me, but the entire community, you could see this powerful impact from one person. I had the I wouldn't call it the pleasure, but it was really wonderful to talk to his mother, Mrs. Powers, obviously under a deeply sad occasion. But you could hear in her voice the love that she had not only for him, but she also expressed to me and to Provost Mike Schneider the love that Jonathan had for Knox. And one of the things we were able to do as a community, we all gathered together the day after we learned of his passing on campus at our Hope Center in a filled room with faculty, students, staff that were present. And to a person, you could tell just by looking at people the impact that he had. But then through wonderful words and stories, we heard of Jonathan's ability to connect with people, with students, with tons and tons of alumni, with parents, with fellow faculty colleagues, and obviously senior staff, administrators, et cetera. It was really amazing to see and hear. And those reflections continue to come in. Even as days have gone by, I'm still hearing from alumni that are either just finding out or wanting to kind of express their J. Powell moment, their story of how he connected with one another. I'll end with this one reflection that was really from a student earlier this year. I remember going to speak to the student athletic group. It's student athletes. And they get together on a weekly basis in the mornings and are really just tremendous kind of advocates for our community. But I was talking to this one student, and she was sharing she was talking about our swimming facilities, actually, and she was describing how she wished that the swimming facilities were a little better. You know, she was looking and not complaining, but referencing the peeling tile. And she was going on a little bit to a point where I asked, I'm like, well, what made you decide to come to Knox if you're, you know, this great swimmer and you've got, you know, sounds like she could have gone a number of different places. But I asked, why Knox? And her response was, it was the coach. She was talking about Jonathan Powers, how Jonathan made her feel wanted, even as a prospective student, made her feel as though that she could make a difference at Knox College. And it was because of Jonathan's kind of input, his kind of leaning in to her and to what she needed, got her to be a member of our community. And, you know, there are tons and tons of examples of his impact. But I wanted to just acknowledge and let you know that we're continuing to think about Jonathan and his family. As soon as we know more in terms of memorial services or things of that nature, we'll share. We've been in touch with the family. We'll continue to do and support them in whatever way that they need. But when you think about a small community, you know, you think a lot of times about the good times, and we've had a lot of good times this year, even though it's been a very difficult year for all of us. Both from a national and global standpoint. But in the moments of sadness, it's really when you see the strength of a community. And I've got to tell you that our Knox community has been super strong as we think about our beloved Jonathan Powers. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you so much for that reflection, Andy. That is, we always hear from students, you know, that about the strength of our student-faculty relationships and how vital they are, and that's an amazing, amazing reflection. We do have some questions, and I would like to give you the first question. It's from Craig in Maine, and the question is, Craig is going to ask you his question. Thank you. Craig, you're live.
Andy, back in the 60s when I was a Knox student, the number of the projected student body was 1250. And you mentioned that one of the goals is to expand the number of applicants and students. What's the number this time?
Right. Great question, Craig, from Maine. What part of Maine are you in, Craig?
20 miles south of Colby.
Oh, got it. Okay, so Augusta.
I live just south of Augusta in Richmond.
Oh, there it is. Great, great, great. So, so currently we're right around 1,100 students, and what I've looked at over time is just looking at the numbers over time, and it looks to me that we've been as low as 900. And as high as probably 1,400 and change, 1,500 students. And my thinking here is, if we can move back into that 1450 to 1500 range, that would be an ideal scenario. And, you know, part of the things that I've been talking about is around growth for the institution, and it's growing not just admissions, but it's growing fundraising. It's looking at, you know, ensuring that we're graduating as many students that come in. Basically, the thought process, if we admit a student and they attend, we want them to finish. And so how can we put kind of program support to ensure that part of the puzzle? But it is our belief that we can grow and still maintain a really rich, warm, supportive environment for our students and faculty and staff. But that's the kind of thought process where we are today.
Thank you, Andy. And we now have another question for you. This is a question from Tom. I don't see his city here, but he has a question for you about who we are competing with for students today. Tom, would you like to ask your question?
Hi, Andy. Thanks for doing this tonight. This is Tom Woolwine. I'm in Kansas City. And I am interested in this first strategic priority that you mentioned about focusing on increasing enrollment. And I immediately go to, well, who's our competition today? I remember who it was back when I was in school in the 70s. But I'm wondering who you compete with today. And then the other piece of that is what kind of scholarships are we offering to, you know, to recruit folks to come to Knox?
Well, great question, Tom. Thanks for joining us this evening. You know, a couple things that I'll talk about, and maybe I'll probably try to give some additional context to the concept about, you know, and why the focus on enrollment and increasing enrollment and thinking about our admission picture. So on the first part, when you're thinking about the schools that we're competing with, in some cases, you start locally, right? So we're in the great state of Illinois. On one level, we're competing with, you know, the flagship, the University of Illinois. We're also competing with schools in our conference, the Associated Colleges of the Midwest, and many of those schools have been a part of our competition for a number of years. And then you start to look at the kind of small liberal arts colleges across the country. We are seeing some competition there. And within the state of Illinois, one of the things that we launched something this year that I wanted to make sure people were, you know, that you were aware of if you haven't heard of it. We launched something called the Prairie Promise this year because to your question, Tom, we were really starting to look at what schools are we competing with in the state of Illinois and where are we losing ground or gaining ground? And we were starting to see through our own analysis that we were losing ground in our own backyard. We were starting to lose great students to sometimes the large state schools and other liberal arts schools within the Midwest. And you start asking the question, why is that? And it probably goes to something that sounds like you put your finger on, which is the kind of scholarship and financial aid piece. We were losing many students because we weren't putting the same amount of financial aid dollars on the table. It wasn't putting enough support for students to consider getting a small liberal arts great experience in education from Knox College when they felt, or those prospective families felt, that by spending an extra $500 wasn't worth it to go to Knox. And so what we were finding is that institutions were putting financial aid packages that were much more lucrative, and families were basically making decisions with their pocketbook and their wallets. And I think that's a phenomenon that we're going to see and continue to see as we look to grow students over time. And so what was very interesting to all of us was that we were starting to see the fact that we were losing students for as little as $500, I say a little, or somewhere between $500 and $2,000. So if we had added $500 to $2,000, depending upon the scenario, we would have gained those students. That seemed like a great kind of reason for us to at least double down, or at least to kind of think differently about that, and which is how the Prairie Promise was actually launched, because we realized how can we be competitive in our own state to make sure that we were going to attract these great students and their families and get them to come to a great institution. Over the last several months, I started traveling to Chicago and Chicago suburbs, talking about this Prairie Promise, and with community organizations or counselors or things and people that were what I would refer to as real influencers for families and prospective students. And what we were learning was that families were indeed making decisions on $500 or less in some cases, but not necessarily looking at the full picture. The full picture being, what's our graduation rate? Full picture being, what are students doing when they graduate from those institutions? We have a really strong track record of students starting and finishing, in many cases, at higher percentages than other institutions, not in 6 years, but within 4 years. The six-year graduation rate is what most institutions compare one another with. But our graduation in year four is a much higher percentage than our peers. And so even though that calculation, if you factor that in, actually is a better benefit for a family because you're graduating, you're getting your degree, and you're doing it in a short amount of time, on the front end is where people were actually making those decisions. So we launched Prairie Promise, and we saw close to a 30% increase in applications and ultimately admittance within the state of Illinois. So we turned around where we were losing ground in 1 year, and we launched the Prairie Promise late in the year. And so our thinking there is that we can really double down and kind of see where that goes over time, and then start to look at other states potentially where we can launch a Prairie Promise type of concept and do that in other states to see about growth in those other areas. And we're seeing growth in, say, the Southwest and South, and so there may be some interest in doing those kinds of things. We've always been, and Tom, I'm sure this may be something that you might be familiar with, but we've always been really strong attracting great students from the state of Colorado. And that's an area, and we've got an amazing kind of Colorado alumni group. I'm sitting in my office here in Galesburg, and I'm looking at the Knox Club Colorado key that I received when I went out to Colorado this past summer for my first pump handle, which was a great event. But nonetheless, we're looking at states like Colorado to kind of build our support and our energies there. But in terms of competition, I mean, I think, large state schools, great small liberal arts institutions are some of the competitors that we look at. We have an incredible international population on our campus. Like close to 20% of our students are international. And even with a pandemic, we're still seeing growth from students from, countries outside of the U.S., which I think really goes to show the impact and the reach that we have here at Knox. So the more that we're able to kind of continue to double down, really articulate our strengths, think about the impact that our faculty have with our students. You know, we talk a lot about the kind of, close relationships, but the other thing that maybe I'll end with on this question is when I look at what we offer and how we do it, I always have to give a tip of my hat to our faculty. And as you may know, most of our faculty live right here in Galesburg. And the reason why that's such a big deal is it ensures in so many ways that our faculty are committed to not just the place, but they're committed to our students. And they're constantly, working closely with our students, whether in the classroom or outside the classroom. They're supporting our students on the fields of play. And that's something that you don't always see in small liberal arts colleges, where you have people that live right here in the community that are giving back to the community. The service means so much, and we're just honored to be able to do that for our students and our families.
Thank you, Andy. That was a wonderful answer, very informative. I do have another question from a Bob from Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and it kind of builds upon the competition question. Bob, do you want to ask the question? I'm jumping in and wanting to ask the question for people. I apologize.
No, I'm very
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Well, thanks for taking the time to visit with us. My name is Bob Castle. I'm here with my spouse, Deb Castle. Deb is a 77 grad. I'm a 78 grad. We live in a suburb of Minneapolis. And just a little bit of context and history. So in 1974, I was attending a public school in a suburb of Chicago, and the college guidance counselor was talking about colleges in Illinois and said that in his judgment, Knox College was the premier private college in Illinois. And I went to Knox, as did my now spouse, and for me, and I think speaking for her, which I do at risk, it was just a tremendous formative experience. And we've always been very, very proud of having graduated from Knox and think that our Knox experience was just incredibly important to us. And we've gone on and been happily married ever after. And interestingly, as I look at the question I'm about to present you with, I look at it from the perspective of parents of a now 28-year-old daughter who in 2016 graduated from a small liberal arts college in a rural community in Maine known as Waterville, Maine, with a college in that with which I think you're quite familiar. And so I look at small colleges from the perspective of a graduate of Knox and the parent of a graduate from another college. And I look at where Knox is today, where it was, 40-odd years ago, and I say to myself, how do we get Knox back to the stature that it once had? And again, I'm sorry I missed your introductory remarks because we ran into the call late, and so you may have touched on some of this, but I just think it's so critical that we maintain and ideally elevate the strength of the student body, the faculty, and there's certainly a role for alumni to play in that process. But I'm just kind of very interested in your thoughts in terms of, how do we compete at a national level for national level liberal arts students?
Yeah, well, great question, Bob. Thank you, and Deb. Glad that you're both on the call. In my opening remarks, the only thing I touched upon, Bob, and it's worth repeating, I shared a little bit about the kind of five strategic priorities that the institution and with the kind of senior administration and the board agreed to focus on this year. And the second priority that I mentioned was elevate Knox's reputation and expand the reach. So the reason that was like kind of clearly put on the map is in many ways directly related to what you're sharing. I can also just tell you one of the things that we did at that summer board retreat with the board kind of hearing a report from me on what I was hearing from the members of the community, trustee emeriti, donors, faculty, staff, students, et cetera. I had shared with them this kind of 16 or 20 themes that I had heard from a series of conversations from, say, the springtime until the summer board retreat, which was in August. I shared with them what I was hearing. In addition to sharing what I was hearing, I also preferenced three things that I thought were really important for the board to consider. And one of them was around admission and enrollment. And as a part of that discussion, I invited some folks from another institution to talk about how that particular institution grew the demand for their education and what could we learn from it. And then we also invited the president of a admission, I guess it was, they're called independent educational consultants. So there was a president of this independent education consultant, because we knew that those independent educational consultants and counselors are huge influencers in terms of where students go. As you might imagine today, many, many families will hire counselors or consultants to work with their loved one to help find the right fit. And, you know, what we wanted to learn from the institution as well as the counselor, what does it take and how can Knox benefit from that information? Some of the things that came out of that conversation was the importance of growing your enrollment and growing the kind of applicant pool. How do you go about doing that? Part of you go about doing that is by increasing who you're communicating with. You know, instead of communicating with, say, 20,000 or 30,000 prospective students and families, how can you grow that to 500,000 or 1,000,000 folks over time? And you can do that through social media, digital marketing, segmentation. So we were hearing about what other institutions were doing and then quickly figuring out what we need to do and are doing in that process. One of the other things that we learned from that initial conversation was the importance of fly-ins of independent educational consultants and basically spending the money to bring influencers to the campus so that they can see what we offer. So we did that this year. We paid for roughly 20 to 25 highly influential independent educational consultants and counselors to spend a few days on Knox's campus. And they came at a time when the campus was abuzz, and it happened to be during our homecoming. It was a week after inauguration, and the place looked amazing. We wined and dined this group. We brought them to the local restaurants. We had them interact with incredible faculty members. They met students. They toured the campus. And then those 20 to 25 counselors go back to their respective areas, and they were represented all across the country. And what we heard, not only from the counselors that were here, was this was the best experience that they had. And those same folks are then now going to other conferences across the country. We've got one of our board members, Tino Schuler, who has been doing this work for a number of years, reported back at our next board meeting because Tino and our VP and Dean of Admission, Paul Stinas, had gone to another conference. I'm blanking on where it was. Maybe it was Colorado or somewhere else. But those counselors were then getting up in a room of 100 other counselors and independent search consultants, educational consultants, talking about their experience at Knox. But it's those types of events. It's recognizing where you can get the biggest bang for your dollar. So obviously we're going to be doing more of that, but that outreach helps to change the perspective and perception in people's minds of what we offer. And then those folks start going out there and talking about this in a way that they weren't talking about it before. I mentioned the Prairie Promise. In addition to bringing going out and providing these better kind of financial aid packages, we're also providing funds for those prospective parents and their counselor, or one or both, to come visit the campus. The one thing and the best thing we have going for us is once prospective families actually see what we do, it changes everything. And so the more of that type of communication that we can do, broadening what we do, it, how we do it, getting the word out, is a part of the kind of work that's ahead of us. But we're already taking advantage of what we learned this past summer and putting it to good use. The last thing I'll say, Lisa Van Riper, who's moderating the call for us, is our VP of Communications and IT. And a big part of the work that we're doing together is looking at how do we get out there and put the type of message to not only the folks in Illinois, but across the globe about the power and the impact of a Knox education. And we're working with a firm to kind of help build out a strategy that can segment that information in a way that's going to be compelling for a prospective student. It's going to be a little different from alumni. It's going to be a little different for the various audiences. But how do you get that out there that's compelling, that's striking, that when you look at it, you know it's uniquely Knox, and that it resonates with people. But the more emphasis that we focus on that strategic item of how to elevate that reputation and brand, it's gonna pay back for us in a great fold. So sorry to be a little long-winded on that one, but I appreciate the question, and thanks so much for dialing in, Bob and Deb.
Thank you, Andy. Very exciting, and really looking forward to that work. And then we have another question from David in Chicago. David has a question about LGBTQ study. David, would you like to ask your question?
Yes. My name is David Igasaki. I'm from the class of 1974. And my question is, are there any plans to add coursework or programming for LGBTQ studies?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wish I had our provost here. You know, we do have a series of classes that I think are helpful for our entire community, and that's probably one that I should have a better response. I don't know that off the top of my head. I don't know if others on the call would, but the thing I will comment on it, and maybe this in some ways is impactful too, is that one of the things that I really was attracted to our community here is, you know, the mission of Knox is all about kind of access for all, and it's a mission that our institution truly walks the walk, and you see it by looking at our students and our faculty and our staff. We're embracing of all. There's this inclusive culture. Not only in the curriculum, but when you look at the students that we serve and how we serve them. I reference a large international community, student of color community. I think when you look at our LGBTQ community, you see a variety of folks on our campus, and they're thriving. They're thriving in every aspect of the community, both in the classroom and outside the classroom. And to me, that's the kind of community that you look around. You want your students to be to graduate and be truly global citizens. And the best way to do that is to actually have a campus that's more representative of the globe than not. And I feel as though many other institutions can learn a lot about what Knox does and continues to do and continues to support. So that's a question that I probably would toss back, and we can get some answers in terms of a future curriculum and respond back to all so that you see where we're going on that front.
Thank you, Andy. So we have a question from Tony, 309 area code, so close by here. About the status of the renovations of Umbeck Science and Math Center.
Hi, Mr. President.
Hello.
This is Tony Labrota, class of 1955.
Oh, Tony, all right. Great, thank you, sir.
And I have sort of a vested interest in the Science and Math Center. I was a biology major. And knowing that the central core has been finished, I was wondering what the status is of the renovation of the four adjacent wings.
Great question, and it's a I would say not a complicated one, but it's an important one. This answer is going to be a little longer than you'd like, but I think it'll give some detail. So, you know, when I arrived, I was listening to the kind of fundraising effort that was going on to kind of create phase one of the science project. And I began asking a lot of questions about the future of science at Knox. What does that look like? How the wings are going to work together, how the different divisions work together. The big question in many ways was, well, who's the lead donor in this kind of project? And, you know, I've been around other institutions where, you know, a new science facility can be as much as $100 million, $50 million, and understanding the need to have the resources to do it and do it right is not cheap. And at the moment, we don't have a lead donor to really push a project of that magnitude forward. However, that's not to say that there's nothing that's going to be done. I mean, one of the things that I've learned after spending a lot of time talking to various departments and faculty are, you know, we've got facilities, but we have facilities where, for instance, in the chemistry area, some of our ventilation systems are not adequate to support the research of our faculty. And that, to me, is very concerning. And so on the short term, we're looking at doing some work right away to ensure that we're able to kind of fix some of the what I would refer to as the basics to make sure that we're ensuring that we're supporting our faculty to do their best work and to keep what's in existence not just functional, but actually to be an attractive source for students and faculty to do their work. So on one hand, we're looking at a series of projects right now to kind of upgrade the current facilities. We hired a firm to do a comprehensive review of all of our facilities on the campus. We've got roughly a 1.2 million square feet of facilities on the campus. Understanding that there, you know, we have some deferred maintenance, we wanted to get a sense of what was the dollar figure of that deferred maintenance. Also, in terms of priority, where are those things that we need to be focusing on first, both in terms of safety, both in terms of the best bang for your buck, how can we leverage? And so that project was just finished in early June, and we shared the results of that project with our board to help us start to think through what happens next. You might imagine that the sciences were pretty high on that list, and that's something that we're investigating and investing in now. We have some funds that we have access to that we can use specifically for capital projects. The science facility is one of those projects that we're going to be addressing. I think, so that's the one part of the answer. The other part of the answer really is starting to look carefully about, well, what does a new science facility look like and what should it look like? The good news is we have a lot of space here on our campus to do lots of different things. And then two, you know, is kind of refurbishing the wings the right thing to do? When you look at science facilities that are being built today, you're seeing much more of this kind of greater collaboration between the disciplines. You know, you hear a lot about kind of computational biology, or you hear the combination between bio and chem, and should we be thinking about something that's much more collaborative in terms of our space so that our faculty are able to interact with one another in a different way? Should we continue with this kind of wing model? And then as we think about donors, you know, should we also start thinking about how we populate our board of trustees, where we start to have leaders in various fields of science that are on our board to help us think through not what's right for next year for the sciences, but what's right for the next 50 years for the sciences? Where is it going? And how can we ensure that getting a science kind of education at Knox is going to put us at the cutting edge for the future? And so some of those conversations, I think, are ahead of us. I've had these, what I'm sharing with all of you, with members of our science faculty to make sure that we're all on the same page and at the same time not wanting to kind of have anyone be discouraged. In fact, this is the time where we should be thinking bigger, thinking about what's the future like and how can we ensure that we take what's been really wonderful over a lot of years to make it even better.
Thank you, Andy. All right. We have another question from Amanda in Evanston, Illinois. Amanda is asking about job placement and what programs we have to support job placement. Amanda, would you like to ask your question?
Sure, thanks. Yeah, my name is Amanda Weimer-Zeem. I'm class of 99. I'm also a graduate of the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern, class of 2006, and I live in Evanston, as was mentioned. And my question is around programs and resources, tools for those that will be graduating for jobs, and just a little bit of, you know, context. Graduating, I know liberal arts programs are very different, undergrad liberal arts compared to like graduate schools, but my experience with Knox and with Kellogg were very different in terms of like career services and support. And so I was just wondering, you know, what is in place to help people, you know, find the job and tap into our, like the wonderful Knox network that we have.
Great. So maybe, can I ask one follow-up question, Amanda? So what was your experience when you were graduating and maybe even while you were here in terms of kind of job preparation and maybe even grad school preparation?
Again, this is obviously dated, right? Class of 99, but I didn't find a lot of support for jobs. I think my experience was I felt like there was a lot of support for those going straight to graduate schools or going straight to med school or, you know, other types of career paths, but not those who were wanting to go straight into the workforce, maybe in business or, like, in my case, I was an international studies major. I did go to career services, but I didn't find there was a way to tap into the network. And just for comparative purposes, when I went to Kellogg 5 years later, I mean, it's so easy to tap alums for help, or the recruiters came on campus en masse, and it was, you know, there were a lot of opportunities to find jobs in different areas.
Right. No, thanks for sharing. So we have, I would say, the foundation to be great at kind of career prep and ensuring postgraduate success. The foundation is here. I would tell you, just as a new person coming in, this is an area that I see great opportunity for us. So the reason I was referencing those five strategic priorities, the concept of identifying and creating distinctive student programs and experiences is all about postgraduate success. Because what I saw when I arrived was we've got a small number of students, and yet I don't think we're doing the best by our students right now in terms of postgraduate success. And I know what we can do better. So we've got something right now called the Power of Experience, and you may have heard about it. It's specifically for juniors and seniors. In many ways, I think the branding of how the program is working is awesome. I think the Power of Experience has like an incredible brand, and yet when you talk about it and you say, hey, well, you can get a Power of Experience grant, you can get it one time for $2,000. That doesn't sound very compelling to me, and that's not going to actually ensure postgraduate success for our students, like if they have one domestic experience. It's my belief that we need to create this kind of smorgasbord of opportunity for our students, so that there's this sense that when you arrive on day one, you've got a guide that walks you through outside of the classroom. A series of opportunities that range from global research, internships, fellowships, you know, entrepreneurship opportunities. Like, that should be what every student does during their 4 years here on our campus, that they graduate with this kind of incredible portfolio of experiences that we've helped them curate based upon their experiences inside the classroom, but it also gives them this ability to kind of explore and see other areas that might be of interest, or guess what they find that they don't want to do. That's also very important. We have a Bastion Career Center. The Bastion family name has been great, and it's wonderful, but it has like two or three people in there for 1,100 students. I mean, that's not enough support that would provide this kind of one-on-one type of experience. So I actually, as part of the that particular strategic initiative, I was sharing with our board what I thought could be an enhanced version of the power of experience. And, you know, I have experience in building something like this at a previous institution. I know that how that can be transformative for prospective students and families. And I also know what didn't work in that model. And then what can we do here at Knox to take advantage of the good pieces, the pieces that we already have here that's built in through the power of experience. And we've already started to pull together all of the variety of resources that we currently have, and they're very siloed. And I just brought, I don't know, it was like 12 people sitting around a table, some of whom were kind of working on their own, others were working together. But from a student perspective, it was forcing a student to potentially go to like 3 or 4 different offices to do 1 or 2 things. And why not think about this from an umbrella level where you have all of these experiences wrapped under one umbrella and a guide that helps the student go through so that then when they're preparing to leave Knox, they're doing it with a portfolio of experiences with an incredible kind of academic background and experience. And then now all of a sudden, if they're choosing to go out into the workforce, they're going to be well-prepared, ready to take on greater challenges, ask the tough questions, partner with, you know, employers, employees, in addition to being prepared for grad school, which, to your point, Amanda, we've always done. Like, if you go back over years and years, I've met Knox alumni that have graduated years and years ago, and they've talked about the power of the preparation to go to grad school. We've never lost that. But where I think we can go even further, and this goes into how you build a reputation, how you build a brand, is imagine if we're out there saying to prospective families and their students, the counselors across the country, you come to Knox, you're going to get a great academic education, but on top of that, we're going to guarantee you postgraduate success in whatever field of human endeavor that you choose. That's the type of kind of narrative that's going to put Knox on a map in a way that it hasn't been before. That's the type of narrative that when you're thinking about, you know, our students and our alumni and our parents being engaged in that kind of support, that changes. I'm confident we can do that. You know, we're a small enough place where in a short period of time, this can become a signature part of what we talk about day in and day out.
Thank you, Andy. We have one last question that we are going to share, and then we'd love to have you make a few closing remarks. Those of you who have questions that we don't get to, we will respond to you following this call. So, Andy, we have Tom, and he has a question about how to engage alumni. This is a perfect ending to this call. So please go ahead and, Tom, ask your question.
Thank you so much. President McGadney, Tom Viner, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Appreciate everything I've heard so far. Until our last caller, I think I was probably most struck by the fact that I think I hadn't been born when anyone had graduated from Knox. So as an O2 grad and I'm a lawyer, I'm concerned about, not concerned, rather, I'm interested in knowing, as someone who has worked extensively at Colby College, which I've been reading all about as we've been talking here tonight, a college that has been the recipient of alumni donations of islands, some very, you know, impressive things, little old Galesburg. I want to know what I can do as an alumnus, what we can expect, and what, you know, we can do to feel more engaged with our alma mater.
Well, great question, Tom. Class of 2002. Yeah, when you're hearing the graduates in the 50s and 70s, and I'm glad that we got a 99 in there, and with Amanda. You know, we're all part of the same family, and I appreciate you dialing in today. I think, you know, in some ways, one one immediate answer is to actually follow up on Amanda's question. You know, one of the best ways to engage and to assist and to support NOCs is to actually to think about it from a standpoint of ensuring postgraduate success for every single one of our graduates. You know, when you see a NOCs graduate and you can help them, think about the kind of boards you serve on, the organization you volunteer with, your own companies. Consider offering, you know, an internship. Considering offering, you know, a job shadow situation. Consider hiring a NOCs graduate. You know, the more that we as a community can think about how we can ensure success for our students, the better off we all are. You know, you think about the value of your NOCs degree, it will continue to rise. When you start understanding and seeing that there are pipelines of NOCs graduates that are going into different fields and different companies or starting their own businesses, you know, support our NOCs graduates that have businesses. Find out about it. Support them. You know, you might know that we've got a great NOCs graduate right here who started a restaurant. I think this is her second restaurant, La Cantinita, right here in Galesburg. You know, I probably spent most of my time there in the first several months working on campus, but we're constantly trying to engage our local businesses as well as our alumni that work and own those local businesses. But that's the mindset that we need to kind of get into as a community, that we'll double down and support our not only our graduates and our current students, but our alumni. I think the other thing that I would say, you know, as I used to always say this, like I'm a recovering fundraiser. I spend a lot of time raising funds and engaging alumni, parents, and friends. And so, and I know our vice president for university advancement is on this call, Monica Keith. You know, to ensure that you are giving every year to NOCs is vital. I mean, we should all, that should just be a no-brainer. Like, we should just do it and do it all every year and think about doing it sometimes twice a year, three times a year. Like, just give. You know, you hear this motto of you give your time, talent, your treasure. That should be all of our kind of mottos, is that, that's what we do. That's a part of who we are. That's how you take a great institution and make it better. And it's you give where you can. You support your students, and come back. You know, one of the things that I always love seeing are our alumni, parents, and friends engaging on the community. I think what was somewhat hard for me in those early days of COVID and the pandemic was being on campus and doing a bunch of Zooms and not seeing faces and people running around the campus. But, you know, I'm looking out my window right now and I'm seeing looks like some kids on a scooter or something. Hopefully they don't fall while I'm watching them. But it's like it's just seeing the activity and the excitement on campus. The last thing I'll end with is when I was, you know, here for commencement weekend, and, you know, there was this great band that was performing the night before commencement. And, you know, I was standing there watching all of this energy and excitement of recent graduates, or they're soon to be graduates, but they were celebrating with their families, dancing with faculty, dancing with staff. That's powerful, and the more we can encourage folks to come back and have and relive in some ways those moments, that just strengthens that kind of interest and desire to be and to do more for our community. So I would leave you with those things. I mean, hopefully that someone you can find pieces there that you feel like, hey, that's really great. And I will just say, too, we know we can do a better job, we being the administration and the folks here that work here, you know, providing additional opportunities for all of you to engage, you know, whether it's on a panel, talking to a group of students, talking to one another. Like, we can do more of those things to provide those opportunities But those are some of the things that come to the top of my head to share.
Thank you so much, Andy. That was wonderful. And thank you all for joining us tonight. Those of you who are still on the line and have not had your questions answered, just hold on and follow the prompts. You can actually leave us a voicemail, and we'll be able to answer your questions that way. Also, a recording of this call will be made available online, and there will be plenty of other opportunities for you to ask questions in the future after this call. Thank you so much for all being a part of this conversation. We hope you have a wonderful evening, and thank you again for your time and participation and engagement. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.